Let's Take This Outside with Marianne Iveson, the podcast where she speaks to athletes, outdoor professionals, and scientists about why they connect with nature.
Today, I'm chatting with Carolyn Simons and Jason Verma from Multisport Canada, an event management company that produces triathlon, duathlon, running, and cycling events in Ontario. Since its inception in 2002, the Multisport Canada Triathlon Series has been the fastest growing triathlon series in North America. In 2010, Multisport Canada became the largest 100% Canadian-owned triathlon series in the world. Please welcome Carolyn and Jason from Multisport Canada. Carolyn, Jason, welcome to Let's Take This Outside. This is going to be so fun. I'm excited to learn about triathlon and multisport, and this is a whole new world for me, so this is going to be mind-blowing, I think.
And we're excited to have you.
Jason, I want to know, what is Multisport Canada?
That's a long story that goes back almost 20 years, 20 plus years now. Myself and John Salt, the founder of Multisport, knew each other in our days when we lived in London. And there's a connection here to Carolyn as well. We were both active triathletes at the time. Myself in my early 20s, John in his mid 40s. We traveled and raced lots of different events in that time frame. And we would always compare notes when we got back from an event, what we liked, what we didn't like. I was organizing some events through what was then the University Triathlon Series. John was working full-time. And sort of by an interesting turn of events, he called me one day and said, you know what? I think I want to start producing some events of my own. Like there's things out there that I really like about events. And there's other things that I think could be really, you know, improved. And as one thing led to another over a couple of years, he started the first multisport event in May of 2002, long time ago. I helped him out that year and came on, you know, with the events full time in 2003. And they were very small family focused events at that time. And they were produced in a way that we thought, what would we actually like to do if we were able to be both the organizer and the participant? And I'll talk about the evolution of that maybe further on in the conversation. But that's how it got started, to try to deliver a fun, friendly, safe, but very personal event. And that's what always resonated with John and me, was that you knew who the person was that was there to take good care of you that day and sort of guide you through. We use the term race director, but there's many other hats that that person and the whole staff wear. But that's how we got started, and our events have grown from there and made it through the pandemic by the skin of our teeth. That's Multisport. We also do a host of other events for different charities, behind the scenes work on, you know, local charity 5Ks and local charity running events. So we're able to find ways to support a lot of different communities through what we do for a living and a loving, because
I love that. I've never heard that before. Jason, I want to make it a little bit more granular. When we say multi-sport, do we mean like fencing and like karate? Let's get a little bit more specific here about multi-sport.
Yeah. Well, and the name came from triathlons, of course, which is by nature a multi-sport affair, swimming, cycling, and running. And there wasn't really too much deeper than that. We always considered ourselves multi-sport athletes as well. Most people that come into a space like this, do other things besides swimming, cycling, and running too. So I think what's in the name is what's in the space.
Carolyn, say you're an athlete and you're like, this seems kind of overwhelming. You know, I want to do my very first triathlon, swim, bike, run. Maybe one's stronger than the other. Maybe I've never been in a pool before. Where does an athlete start when it comes to multisport?
Great question, Marianne. And I think you can speak to how organic it is that you found out that we offer more than just the swim, bike, and run order. There's a run, bike, run order. There's a swim, bike. There's a relay event option. And I think that when you look at the sport in context, it's really great to distill it down. If you come from a swimming background, great. You're already halfway further than you think you are. But when we look at the distances, which I think is where we can speak to most first-time participants who are looking at something that's relatively 40 minutes to 1 hour, that's our give it a try distance. And we get to see a lot of athletes try signing up for that for the first time, really not knowing where to get into things. But then a matter of time, they can be into that sprint distance where you're looking at the 1 hour, maybe even longer. And then of course, getting into that intermediate or Olympic slash standard distance. We also call it the international distance for the duathlon. And then of course, progressing into more experienced, longer distance events over the 2.5 to 3 hour mark. When it comes to starting, I think that it's always important to remember that you do not have to have this all figured out. There are a lot of online resources, whether you're coming from a running background and have done maybe your first 5K. Believe it or not, it's sort of like any other skill. You pick up your habits haphazardly, you start to build training. Then I say, go to online resources. Look at some templates, start there, get comfortable with consistency. One of the things we had talked about before, be patient with your running. That's always important to remember because whether it's something that you use as a baseline, getting your aerobic engine working, you know what? There's so much to be said for that base training. Again, went out for a 40-minute run this morning. It was definitely a different season than it is out there right now. And then just be patient with the fact that it will come over time. You just got to give it time.
And it's not just be patient with running. It's be patient with any of the three disciplines.
That's right. And we've set up a great resource library over the years. If you scroll over to multisportcanada.com, you'll see that resource library there. It's got everything from wetsuits to rules on the bike, things that you don't have to really know until you have the chance to read it and then get that experience once you're finally there on race day.
Jason, you mentioned, okay, we made it through the pandemic by the skin of our teeth. I think that's really impressive. It shows how committed people are to doing this and coming back. But there seems to be a strong interest in athletic events like triathlon, for example. Why do you think that is in a post-pandemic world? And if fitness is part of your lifestyle, is triathlon something that you can do?
To answer the last question, it's a definite yes. Through the pandemic, I think there was a shift of folks discovering activity. We'll call it independent, self-driven activity. We couldn't do team sports. We couldn't do a lot of the things that we had before. And I think that created a new, we'll call it generation, of people that were out there biking a bit, running a bit, whether that's inside on their or outside. And through that, it mirrors a lot of the, we'll call it waves of participation that triathlon has seen in the past, where there was some outside force, we'll call it that, that created a movement towards new people coming in. We saw that immediately post-pandemic with running. Running events seemed to bounce back quite well. Triathlon took a little bit longer, but I think as you know, you're coming to find out, there's a little bit more to learn about it, and most people take baby steps into that. But the numbers, participation numbers this year from most folks that we chat with seem strong. And I think that's testament to the fact that there's a lot of new folks coming in. And Carolyn can speak a little bit more to this in terms of what we saw with first timer numbers last year that were higher percentage wise than we'd ever seen in the past.
That's right. Thank you, Jason. And I think this is part of the fun behind the scenes work that we get to do is really looking at the season once we're off the race course, because then we're in a position to say, how are people finding us? Believe it or not, we were able to take some of that data and go through the process of understanding how important it was to know that 34% of our participants were racing with us for the first time. So what that means too is they could have had other experiences within local triathlon community runs or other running events. But when we looked at that number, we really were able to focus on how are we reaching the participant and giving them and delivering a great experience based on the fact that that percentage was so high. And then, you know, we also have to be mindful of the fact that, you know, we have a really loyal customer base. We're so grateful for that. That took years to cultivate. And because of that, we were able to understand that 36% of our participants in 2023 were actually return or past participants. That is also a really important thing to us. And then, of course, we can go one step further, find out that they were learning about us through friends and family. Again, clubs are really important to us in our community. And then there was the new advent of people maybe finding us through an internet search or social media. That was really interesting to see. So, you know, we really try to understand how people are finding us. And as Jason alluded to before about multisport, we love learning about how did people come into this and what sports were they actually doing? Because I can honestly say from an athletic background myself, I couldn't have come from something more opposite. And then, you know, you get to that point where you say, I think that this is something I can actually do. I just got to give it time and maybe be in a position where if I'm going to have a good first time experience, I want to make sure that I sign up with an organization that's going to be able to deliver that so that I can decide if this is really for me or not. And so, you know, when we do get the chance to meet athletes on the race course, again, we make it really personal, whether it's awards or Jason at the finish line, also just shaking hands and learning about people's experience. Actually, one of the last events that I had the chance to work, we were taking the site down, we call it a knockdown at the site. And there was three guys that were just loading into a van going, I'm addicted. That was so fun. I can't wait to do it again. And honestly, that's what it's about for us a lot when we come to work, because yes, you know, some aspects of the race can be a little bit repetitive. And what we mean by that is, you know, you've got your order of how the day will roll out, but it really all comes down to how people feel when they leave. And that's what makes us feel pretty good at the end of the day as well.
I can relate to so much of what you just said, the addiction of things. If you told me, because we're recording this in March, if you told me in December that I would be swimming three times a week in March, I would have laughed at you. I'm like, joke's on you. I haven't been in a pool since I was like actually swimming or lessons since I was 8. So I totally get that. I totally get the feeling. And I see why people are, what you say, addicted. They're like, oh, I'm definitely doing this again, right?
And not only that, Marianne, it was so refreshing to get the chance to meet you, because you had already put this into a routine, believe it or not. And I think that those little adjustments, like, oh my gosh, sometimes I maybe got to get to work. My hair's a little wet because I was in the pool. Did I bring my right gear for training that day? That's actually the work, if you think about it.
I want to call you out too for a second, because I'm also this kind of person. Jason, I feel like you are too. But in the back of your car, you always have like just like different changes of like clothes and running shoes. Like I think I have snowshoes still in my car. I always have my hiking boots in the summer. Like there's every sport that you can just grab out of the back of your car in a moment's notice. You're like, oh, I can swim. Oh, I can go for a run. Oh, I can go for a bike ride.
You got it. And you'll see that my car has probably never had its seats up. Ever.
Right.
And that's because it's always getting ready to either throw my bike in there. But I mean, one thing I can honestly say that's been really great is having that swim bag there. It's always a reminder. It's a cue. I used to do that a lot before when I used to work shifts before where I had this break in the middle of the day. And if you don't think you can get it in during your workday, guess what? That can sometimes be the best way to reset yourself so that you can re-regulate essentially. And I think a lot of us here at Multisport Canada are they have that innate need. I mean, Jason can say for sure, he just got back from coaching skiing, right?
Most of the winter Nordic ski coaching.
So that's why you haven't been in a pool in a while.
It's too cold. Outside's much warmer.
Carolyn, you kind of touched on this, but how do you know what event and distance to sign up for? Because there are so many options.
Great question. And thank you so much for asking things that I think are the most reflective of what we see a lot here behind the scenes at Multisport Canada before our participants show up. I tend to lean on encouraging participants to consider Welland, Barrie, and Toronto Island. And the reason why I think those are great options is you're going to get that variety of distances that we offer. You're going to have a marked swim course in Welland, which is super fun and just great to visualize. You're also in a basin, which is going to limit some of the choppiness in the water, which is also really nice. Toronto Island is great because you're on a looped format of a course, and therefore you can really conceivably say, oh, wow, I'm going to tour around the island and make this fun instead of it necessarily being a challenge where you maybe require a little bit more preparation. And again, I'd also touch base on Barrie being so important to us. As a Barrie-based organization, we also host the Honda Waterfront Run there. So if you ever want to preview the course, please come out and join us on June 2nd. And, you know, that's a great event because we've got all ages. So if we're looking at Kids of Steel all the way up to 15, we've got to give it a try there. Again, the sprint distances. And this year, I believe we've got some qualifying events there as well for the 2025 national team. So that would be my best answer on how to prepare for something where you're going to pretty much have a really good overview. Again, we've got course maps available online. That's something you can always consult with. And then, of course, if you have any questions, just call us in and ask us.
Just to wrap my head around it for a second, or anyone who's listening, the give it a try, you know, that's a starter. What would that look like distance-wise for all three?
Great question. So again, the order being swim, bike, and run, you're looking at a 400-meter swim. You're looking at a 10-kilometer bike ride, and then a 2.5-kilometer run off the bike till the way to the finish line.
Doable?
Very doable. And I'm going to jump in for a second here just to give people some perspective on how attainable that is. Most folks can do 400 meters of swimming and be out and on their bicycle in around 10 minutes, give or take. So if you think, swim in a lake, 10 minutes and I'm on my bike. Most folks can bike 10 kilometers in 20 minutes to half an hour, give or take. So you're thinking 20 minute to half an hour bike ride. That seems pretty reasonable. And most folks, if they went out and ran 2.5 kilometers, it's a 15 minute run. So when you break it down into those pieces, those three pieces, in bite-sized chunks, we'll call it that, that's when I think most people connect with the fact they're like, I can swim for 10 to 15 minutes and I can bike for 20 minutes to half an hour and I can run for 15 minutes.
Thanks for making it, like putting numbers behind that, because it makes it like, oh, I can definitely do that, especially if I prep for it. And speaking of prepping for it, Jason, if they're listening to this in April, how does a person physically and mentally prepare themselves for an event like this summer?
Carolyn talked about this a little bit. Be patient. And as much as you, Marianne, have jumped into the pool and are swimming, you know, three times a week, you don't need to swim three times a week to get ready for a triathlon that might have 10 to 15 minutes of swimming.
I'm trying not to drown, Jason. That's the point. I'm just trying.
That's fine. I would say make a schedule that's consistent and attainable. Try to be active every day and try to do just a little bit more each week. And when we say a little bit, that might only be 10 to 15% more than you did last week, so that you can carefully and consistently build up how much swimming, how much cycling, and how much running you're doing. And don't be in a rush. I would say that to most people, both in how much prep you do, how quickly you do it, and as well with the distances that we offer, just because one triathlon is longer than another, yes, physically it might be a little bit more demanding, but there's so much to learn. And I would say with preparation, take the time to do the, we'll call them the beginner level distances, learn about how events work. And I can talk a little bit more about how an event day works, and just be patient. And get to know lots of people, ask a lot of questions, and it'll come in time. Everyone comes from a different background in a different place, so there is no one, and I'm not sort of dancing around, you know, how much of this and how much of that would you do? Because there's no one right answer to that question. Someone that comes from a background, let's say someone that used to swim quite regularly, funny enough, might have to do less swimming than you're doing, because that's the strength that they're carrying in. So there's no one right answer to that. But be consistent, find a way to make it part of your daily rhythm and your daily life. And then it's actually not training, it's just what you do and it's fun.
Hi, I'm Steve Yerko.
And I'm Tara Sands. Now available from Maji Media is our new podcast, 4Kids Flashback. 4Kids is the company who brought you the English dub of Pokemon in the late 90s and so many other shows like Yu-Gi-Oh!, Shaman King, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Kirby, the infamous One Piece dub, and so many more.
We'll be talking to the people who worked at 4Kids. Actors, directors, writers, editors, producers, engineers, you get the point. And hopefully get the answers to questions both you and I have about the company.
I actually worked there as a voice actor on some of the shows.
And I was a kid watching the shows and remember way more than Tara does.
and thank God for that. Steve is actually a professional storyboard artist, which gives some really unique insights into anime and animation. Subscribe today wherever you get your podcasts. That's the number 4 Kids Flashback.
Let's Take This Outside now has a newsletter. Keep up to date with outdoor news, events, and great discount codes and deals from our partners. Sign up today at letstakethisoutside.ca.
You mentioned this, but okay, you've signed up, you've done the training, the day comes, and you know what? It actually, as someone who's first time, it feels a bit intimidating. So can you describe what the day of might look like for a newcomer?
You know what I'm going to do is I'm going to back it up 36 hours from that. Because I think that one of the most important things, if you want to have fun on a race day, you talked about being prepared, there are some sort of final preparations to make, right? Make sure you've got all your gear, you know where it is, your bike's in good working order. And I always tell this, talk about coaching to the kids that I coach, get your bag out and pack the night before. Like, have all of that sort of stuff ready and read the information about the race, know where you're going, know where you're going to park. So it all on the morning of the event, now if we come to actually answering the question, that on the morning of the event, this is just something that you've prepared for. And that way, we'll call it the energy levels on the morning, it's all positive energy because you inevitably will have some nervous energy if you're doing something for the first time. And being nervous is not a bad thing. That's a good thing. It means you're engaged and you want to have fun and do it well. And then I would say that on the day, and I'm going to pass it off to Carolyn for this part, when you get to the venue, have a sense, because we try to put a lot of these resources online, about the steps you're going to go through it. And Carolyn can give some suggestions on that.
Yes. Thank you, Jason. One of the things that we always try to recommend is, on top of what we tell you in your pre-event notice on what time to roughly be there at, add 30 to 45 minutes for your first time. Reasonably, if you think about how important that is, it's because you're working through the unknowns. So for instance, number one, you're going to come, you're going to park your bike and transition. It's that simple. You've got your bib number already from us. You can guarantee that's going to be in your inbox prior to the event. And then come to registration. There you're going to be picking up your bib. You're going to be picking up your timing chip. Remember, no chip, no time. Pretty important, right? And then you're going to be picking up your swim cap, as well as taking the opportunity to maybe ask some questions. That's what we're really there for. You'll see Jason and I as well very much triaging different areas of the site. So whether we get the chance to interact with you as soon as you come into the transition zone, again, just a friendly reminder, that's where you are parking your bike. It's a very well-defined area, and you're going to see the racking there with specific ranges. That's where you take your bib number, you take a quick look at that, go, okay, I know I'm between 0 and 50, park that there, and then again, make your way over to registration. And again, prior to that as well, you know, if you feel like you forgot something, really common thing, you know, again, we would hope that you would actually come to the race a little bit prepared. Don't forget to make things simple for you. Wear your tri-kit or wear your two-piece, whatever you're comfortable with. Wear your sunglasses, wear your running shoes. That's going to take all that thinking out of the equation so that when you pull open your bag and you're going, great, there's my wetsuit. I have a little towel that I can maybe park under my bike. Some backup items like your helmet, which of course you definitely need. And, you know, don't forget things like that you might personally need, like your own race nutrition. I always say nothing new on race day. And I'll say it again, nothing new on race day. Just like Jason was saying, 36 hour prior, that's where you're making those meal decisions as well. Don't forget how important that is. If you want to put the training in, you want to have a great first experience. Once you get that bike parked in there, get yourself a little bit of a warm up. Then you're going to roll right into the briefing, which I know Jason can speak to you right now.
Also, you're saying that trying that gel for the first time while you're on the bike is a bad idea?
Yes. As someone who's actually struggled a lot with their race nutrition.
Oh, right. Oh my gosh, my tummy is so finicky.
Yeah. It almost took me 10 years. And I, you know, you don't have to be a pro at it your first time, but you have to definitely use these as checklists on what's working, what do I do? And then maybe think about replicating that as you get through the season. You know, if you're doing more than one event, perfect. You know, this went well. Well, I would say do a hot wash. Wash out what went well and what did not. And then if you do that after each event, you know, you really kind of step off and go, I think I can do this again, right? So speaking of safety and those issues as well that I think are always key to ask, if you don't feel like you maybe got some of your questions answered and, you know, you're mingling with people in transition, get to the briefing. A lot of that will be answered there. And then Jason will be able to highlight some of the key things that you can expect in that briefing.
Excellent. Also, one quick question about the bike. People are very finicky about their bikes, including myself. I never let it out of my sight. I'm assuming it's totally and completely safe when I leave. Again, I've never done a triathlon or anything. So like, it's totally safe. It's good when we leave it there, right?
It's in a fenced-in corral.
Of course.
And the only people that are actually at the race when everyone is the participants. I mean, spectators stay out of the fenced-in corral. It's a pretty welcoming environment.
This has to be a real question people ask, right?
Like, oh, yeah.
Yes.
Well, and so one of the questions people have asked is, you know, do I need to lock my bicycle while it's in transition? And we say, you know, no. If you want to have a means by which to lock it on your car, if you're going to go someplace afterwards, that's your prerogative. But usually our events take place in some quieter areas. So we need the space.
Right. And then I think also too, what's also key to remind yourself of is, you know, if you got to get on your bike before you're going to park it in transition, make that a must have. Make sure it's in a gear that you think is comfortable. Again, you don't have to have it nailed on the first day, but you want to know what to expect when you pull that bike off. Because remember too, you may have some people who are nice and tight joined in on that rack with you. And then you also want to make sure that all your gear is safely tucked underneath. We are very mindful of gear in transition or the bike corral area. So just make sure that you really only have your essentials under there. And then you can just tuck your bag quietly off to the side before you make your way over to the swim start.
I'm so glad that we're tackling a lot of the barriers to entry and what things are actually looking like and demystifying things. And I think a barrier to entry could be all the gear and things you need. It could be, you know, do I need the fastest shoes? Do I need the $20,000 bike that my friend has that is, you know, riding around Gatineau Park? What do you really need to get started?
Great. Well, I'll start off with this one and I'll pass it off to Jason too, because I always say two heads are better than one. But again, your bag, which you're, or call your transition bag, which is going to contain the majority of your contents, make sure you've got, of course, your bike packed, but look at the little things. If you don't have a bib belt where you put your bib on, we've got safety pins at registration. So no need to feel like you've absolutely got to have that right off the get-go. You're going to need your helmet, your shoes, your wetsuit, possible race nutrition. Again, a towel that you can tuck on underneath. If you want to get a little bit more fancier, maybe some backup CO2 for your tires. Again, we do have some bike pumps that kick around transition as well, but some people like to bring their own and that's okay too. Maybe you want to have that tucked in the back of the car so you can do it before you even arrive to the raid site. Don't forget water bottles for your bike as well. And again, something comfortable that you've actually trained in before, because again, I'll say it for the third time, nothing new on race day.
Getting back to the core of your question in terms of barriers to entry, most people when they see, we'll say any sport, they're going to see it on, and we use maybe a dated term, on television. And they're going to see people who are doing it, who are very experienced, who, like you said, have the latest and greatest gear. If you were to come out to one of our events and look around, you would see people that have some pretty straightforward equipment. And I'll sort of tell a story. Carolyn mentioned our triathlon that we have on Toronto Island. A lot of people that participate in that event, it has one of the highest first-timer percentages of any event that we do, are using the same bike that they're using to commute to work on. To the point where we mentioned bike lock, I can distinctly remember one morning at Toronto Island, I was talking with somebody and I heard this rattling sound. And I looked over my shoulder and sure enough, it was somebody pushing a hybrid bike and their bicycle lock was still on the bike. They came to transition with it on. And that's very, very normal. You don't need all the latest and greatest. You just need stuff that's comfortable, a bike that fits you, shoes that aren't too old. And when we say old, shoes do wear down over time, so you have to replace them. And know that if you come out and you've got a swimsuit, a t-shirt, the bike that you normally ride around, and a set of running shoes and a hat and a set of sunglasses, you're going to fit right in. It's not what you would, local triathlons at least, are not what you would see coming back full circle to what you'd see on television, on at the Olympics, an Ironman race. It's nothing like that. And so that's one of the things we like to talk to folks about, is that the barriers to entry that you may perceive there to be, in reality, the only barriers are you and whether it's something you can work into your lifestyle.
Part of your mission statement is committed to providing safe, fair, and fun events in the highest quality of design and execution. How seriously do you need to take safety in an event like this? I feel like it has to be top priority.
Yeah. And, you know, when we talked about our intro in terms of multi-sport and the person who is, you know, the race director, that's really at the end of the day, the person who people are putting their trust in to give them that event that is safe, that is fair, and in the end is fun. So when we think about how we put an event together, that's definitely evolved over time as the events have grown to think, is this something that folks are going to be able to do, the vast majority of them? And this gets back to the attainable and barriers to entry. We don't design these events for the elite person. We design them for a person who wants to come out and have a fun fitness experience. And we make sure that it's going to be safe for that type of person. And then when we say an event being fair, we put a lot of thought, and you talked about the design, we put a lot of thought into the design of the events so that whether you're in one of the early starts that we have, one of the middle starts, because triathlons, at least the ones that we do, everyone doesn't start at once. We don't line all whatever 100 people up on the beach, blow a horn, and everybody streams into the water. You're starting in small groups. That's part of the sort of safety design of it, so that everyone's got enough elbow room, whether that be in the water, on a cycling route, or on the run. And so that we can create an event that is safe and it is fair. And the fun factor, I think, for most people comes from an event that seems uneventful in its own way. There wasn't points of stress, points of confusion. You were just out there doing your thing, moving along, and you got to the finish line and it seemed easy. And I say easy more from like a mental standpoint, not a lot of nervous energy, just easy to find, easy to follow. So it's our top priority. Without sounding cliche about that, it's the thing that we use to judge whether we can or can't do something.
I think that's such a good point. If all I have to focus on is swimming, biking, and running, I don't have to worry about, am I in the right course? Did I miss this thing? Did I miss this turn? Where's my bike? Like, if I just have to worry about the actual actions of what I trained for, I think that is as smooth as possible that it can go for someone.
And that creates an environment where if it's easy for participants to follow, we always tell folks, you know, you're the one that needs to, in the end, make the decisions, those micro decisions along the way that put your personal safety, as well as the safety of the others around you, top of mind. If what you're doing is easy to follow and straightforward, it's a lot easier for you to make a decision that's a good, safe decision.
Carolyn, I know you mentioned this earlier in our chat, but you have a load of resources on your website. Remind people what they can find there when they're training.
Thanks so much for asking, just simply because it's usually the jump off point for where we tell someone to start when it comes to Multisport Canada. Go to our website. You're going to see under the resource library, right in the nav bar right there, you're going to be able to pull that down and see on the right hand side that you're going to have everything from race rules and etiquette. You're also going to have information on wetsuits. You're going to have information about clubs, even some sample training programs. And also too, one thing that I think is really valuable is to sift through what looks like a lot of information, but just remember that we're making it content rich so that you have all of that in advance. Again, some people find us through different engines, but start with the website. There you can start to understand the framework of what to expect on a given day. Once you've worked through a little bit of that and you still have questions, again, we don't hesitate to be right then and there answering your emails and phone calls. And then, of course, showing up on race day. You can hear a lot of that through Jason's briefing at the beginning of the event. And again, one of the things that we also encourage is to reach out online. We've got several social media platforms where we've built up a following of over 20,000 people. And we're lucky and faithful to that so that you're also getting accurate information. We've also got ambassadors who we have floating around each race site. And as well, if something on there doesn't seem to click in right away, that's also a great opportunity to reach out with us with that question and say, I read on your website that I shouldn't have a kickstand on my bike. How important is that? And then we can maybe give you a little bit more information so that you can understand how to be even more prepared. So again, make sure you check out our resource library. Again, you're going to see all those resources down there, as well as also check our news feed on a regular basis. We tend to have a lot of good tips and news upcoming about the events that maybe is also important for us to highlight. So don't forget to check those regularly. And then again, you can depend on us for getting your pre-event notices before your event.
Thanks, Carolyn. There's something I do need to clarify and make sure that I'm saying this right, but I made a grave mistake by saying bathing suit versus swimsuit. And I just wanted to make sure that it's swimsuit. Did I get that wrong?
We do swim. Yes, it's definitely a swimsuit.
Okay, so when I double check. Carolyn, would you agree with that?
Yes. And for some people, if they're wearing that swimsuit underneath their wetsuit, again, we do recommend wetsuits for our events. You know what? You've already been training in it. Make sure you wear that one that's comfortable for you. So don't forget, you also need to grab your swim cap and we'll be able to get that to you in registration as well.
And the reason this came up is because I was talking about, I've started swimming all the time. Like, I own like 3 or 4 bathing suits now. And Jason's like, it's a swimsuit. I'm like, oh, I guess that's what I'm doing in it. Never mind. So I'm learning. I'm learning as we go. I haven't decided which one I'm signing up for, but I didn't even know it existed. So I'm so glad that we chatted about this. But due to some injuries, I didn't want to run, and I want to enjoy my training and not be in pain for the next about 3 to 4 months. So I'll be doing the swim bike, which I'm really excited about. I don't know which distance I'm doing yet. Probably it's like what, the 750 meter swim, and then I think a 30K bike.
Yeah. And the nice thing about Kingston is we've got a slightly longer than what's called sprint distance. So we call it a short course triathlon there, or short course swim bike.
Okay. I'm very excited to do that. And Jason, I can't wait for your briefing at the event.
It'll be riveting.
Is there anything else you wanted to add other than, honestly, I've learned so much today.
When you come to one of our race briefings, people would often think it's something that I need to be there, you know, with a notepad and there's all sorts of important information. We try to keep it simple. We try to keep it friendly, and we use it to set the tone for the day and the approach that we want you to take throughout the day. We do hit on the safe, fair, and fun aspects of it, making smart decisions, enjoying yourself, being friendly with those around you. So, you know, when you come to one of the events, you'll pick up some important information at the briefings, but it's more about, as I said, setting the tone for the day.
Carolyn, is there anything else you wanted to add?
Honestly, I am so grateful that we've had this opportunity to sort of dangle different topics, but also dive a little bit further into, you know, all the little things. And I think too, that it's just important to remember that after listening to this today, if you're new, and your goal was maybe just to finish, well, we would hope that what you could take away is that you actually feel like you're fit enough to do what Multisport Canada says that you can do. And each person has a different level for that. And all of us have had the chance to either be on the race course or on the production side or be involved in the wonderful world of athletics. So just remember that everyone was new at one point. And it's really great to also see our athletes develop. And we see them get all the way up to that elite level as well. So this opens up a door for you to say, I'm going to focus on right what's in front of me. And we're going to do the same thing as organizers, is make sure that we can respond in a tactful way so that you've got a great day.
Well, I can't wait to pepper you guys with questions over the next 3 to 4 months in my own training, but all the website, all the information will be up on the show notes. And I'm looking forward to seeing you end of July in Kingston. We're going to have a blast.
Good luck in training.
Thanks for listening. For more Let's Take This Outside, go to letstakethisoutside.ca.
Kids, I'm your eager beaver.
And I'm Mr. Grizzly.
If you love politics
or hate politics,
then have we the perfect podcast for you.
The True North Eager Beaver.
Incisive political commentary.
We keep you up to date
and give you the political and media literacy you seek
to help you
cut through the bovine fecal matter.
Facts first.
Sound analysis.
Sometimes I growl.
Sometimes I sass.
We impart civics and build community.
And we share some laughs along the way.
Being informed
and engaged has never been more fabulous.
Or sexy. Catch us on the Dean Blundell Network. Or on our YouTube channel.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
Because democracy is something you do.
Produced and distributed by the Sound Off Media Company.